And this is one of my favorite guys joining us this morning, Mr. Barnaby Wayne Fan, engineer par excellence.
Well, it's great to be back here at Oshkosh, guys, and we always enjoy the conversation. So what are we talking about today?
Designer of strange things. Let's talk about the state of home building. This is a subject I'd love to talk about. How much has it changed in the last 10 years? How much has the economy in the last 2 years changed the way people are building airplanes?
I think it's changed less than you think and more than you think simultaneously. I mean, the people are out there in their hangars. They're still beavering away building marvelous things.
But are we seeing a return to plans and scratch built because of costs?
I don't see a strong thread that way. I think, you know, sort of what happened and probably 15, 20 years ago when the kits really came strong, you got kind of a bifurcation. You had the people who were building kits.
Big word there.
Yeah. Mm. Split, whatever, call it what you want.
I like bifurcation.
You had, if you go back to the first stage of EAA, which some people refer to as the golden age, which is probably not being fair to the age we have now, which is quite wonderful, you had a relatively small number of people scratch building. It was a small organization, and that size group is still out there, and they're still building new and interesting things. And then you have the people building kits in much larger numbers than the original home builders, and they're still building. So, you know, certainly in my world, I see just about as much activity as ever. I see some trend toward easier to build or lower cost kits. You know, the Sonics is a good example in there.
Yes, I was staring at
and,
that
you know,
yesterday.
People are getting more cost conscious in the sense that, you know, a good piece of the fast kits went way up market to the kind of thing where, you know, those guys' fuel budget would pay for my entire fleet of airplanes. So I think there's still some place for everyone, but the scratch builders are still out there.
Just the guy that spent 17 years building his Seawind or something. Well, that's not the wrong.
Well,
a Wag Arrow or something.
Or something like that, or an original design or a replica. I mean, there was an article in Sport Aviation just recently about this SE-5 replica where the guy literally grew his own wood, you know, which is the ultimate
now
scratch
that's patience.
You know, I'm flight testing a new ultralight that was a very long, slow scratch build project, you know, when we had time in the garage.
Yes, one of those, the fixture project.
Yeah, but it's flying, so, you know, we're 6 years into a six-month project, but we're in the air.
There you go. That's better than mine.
Well, you know, one of the questions I have, Barnaby, is it seems that more and more turbine engines are coming onto the market, and there are a bunch of them that are being aimed at home builders. Now, have you seen a trend towards people putting turbines on the front of their home builds?
Some trend toward turbines. What basically happened is, you know, the people who wanted to go high and fast kind of got to the limit of what they could do with the piston engines, single engines that are available now. You know, they got to the top of the Lycoming line, like the 0540 or the 550, and they still wanted to go higher and they still wanted to go faster. And so there was some attempt to do things with converted auto engines, like you saw the Legend at one time. And that's about the time that the Eastern European turbines started to show up. And for that class of airplanes where you're going high and fast, that looks like a better bet than a somewhat problematic, highly stressed piston engine. So there is that trend. So in a weird sort of way, the very high-end piston has disappeared. You have things up to about the 0360, say, you know, what's powering the RVs and the EZs and things like that. And then the people who really want to go up there and would be flying a business jet if they didn't want to drive themselves are flying turbines.
Do you think there's going to be a turbine equivalent of the 0360 coming down the pipeline?
As far as that, I doubt it, because really what happens is a turbine engine is an engine that wants to fly high and fast. It burns a lot of fuel, and what makes it work, turbines or jets, is that you're going fast enough that even though the gallons per hour is ferocious, the miles per hour is ferocious too, and it adds up in terms of miles per gallon and dollars per mile. Once you get down into the smaller engines, what you're trying to do with the airplane isn't as compatible with the turbine, because the turbine fuel specifics aren't as good, so you want the fuel economy of the piston. Also, obviously, fuel availability at general aviation airports, the smaller airports. I can go into any little airport in the country and get 100 low or you know, autogas. I can't get Jet A lot of those airports. So I don't see the turbine coming down into that size class anytime soon.
Well, there was a big splash by a company about 5 years ago, but they seem to have gone by the wayside.
Well, you know, that kind of relates to, you know, when I teach engineering, the second law of applied aerodynamics is it's always propulsion's fault. and you know, some of that happens if you take a look in the engine world, in the experimental world, it seems like every year there's somebody who has the new engine that's going to be the solution.
The panacea, yeah. Yeah,
the cure for the common Rotax.
And nice.
You know, and, you know, a few of them make it, but most of them, even if they're good engines on the prototype bench, what it takes to get from a running prototype engine to a producible, supportable machine is enormous
right.
in terms of resources, so they don't get there. So, you know, you kind of watch these things happen, and you pull for those guys because you look at some of these engines and say, yes, I want one. When can I buy one? And then you wait and see what happens.
The Power Sport Rotary.
Well, any one of these. And the thing is, you know, from a designer's viewpoint, the available propulsion system kind of drives the possibilities. You know, you see, you know, a lot of guys, they're building an airplane, they say, okay, what can I power it with? I see an engine and say, what kind of airplane can I build with that engine?
Yeah, what can I wrap around it?
Well, what does that enable?
Right. Where does it go?
Well, you know, because the availability of the turbines enabled going much higher and much faster and maybe even being pressurized. You know, you give me a 50-pound, 40-horsepower reliable four-stroke, and I will build you, you know, the super light sport of my dreams.
Oh, he sounds like he's already got that one on a napkin somewhere.
Several napkins.
Got a file of napkins, do you?
Oh, yeah. I've got, you know, loose leaves full of configuration sketches. I mean, I'm always 200 or 300 ahead of the building.
You know, this is a guy that we ought to have designed some model airplanes for us. It sounds like he's halfway there already.
This is a guy that I want to just hang out in his garage and work with.
Well, you know, one of the other things that has come along lately has been the builder assist programs. Have you seen an increase in those?
Yeah, I've seen a trend in that direction. And, you know, once again, it's the good bad. I mean, the whole 51% rule idea was for people building their own things. But once you get builder assistance and you have people who know what they're doing with a particular airplane, you can make, you know, you can obviously, for the builder, it cuts the build time down dramatically. But it also gets some quality control into the process. So some of the trickier things, you know, because every airplane has its one tricky thing that you got to do right. And if you're in a knowledgeable builder assist program with people who've done it a bunch of times and know it from the factory, then you get a lot of help working through that. So there's a lot of virtue in that approach. Of course, you know, once again, it gets into that cost trade. You know, Right. You can trade your own time and effort for money in a lot of different ways. I mean, I know someone who did a sportsman in the builder assist, quick build builder assist program, and he's a happy man. He's flying his airplane. And
well, do you see it right there? Do you see a shift away? I mean, the old mindset was the building was as much as the flying. And now it seems we're getting to the point where I just want to get through the building part so I can go fly.
Well, there's both. And really, once again, what I say is those old school people for whom the building was the journey. And it's almost done when you make the first flight and what am I going to build next? They're still out there. But they're not a particularly large group. They're as large as the old EAA was, but the new EAA is so much bigger. And so you get a lot of other people who look at these wonderful machines out there and say, I want one. And that's their path to get to it. And some of those people have, you know, they're brilliant craftsmen, and some of these things are out there, even so, are works of art. But their objective is somewhat different. They're looking at that airplane from the utility after it's built, and they're building an airplane with the idea they're going to fly it for 20 years. So that the building in and of itself, at least initially, starts out to be less of the purpose. I think a lot of them get absorbed into the art of doing it, and the building becomes the journey even for the kit builders.
Well, I would think that if anybody spends any time here, their expectations and standards rise.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, if you aspire to grand champion or, you know, that sort of thing, your expectations rise astronomically. But, you know, there's a lot of airplanes out here still that to use an old term, are sincere. You know, they're sound, solid airplanes. They're not trying to be the beauty queen, but they're somebody's personal expression of what it takes to go flying. And some of them, you know, are a little dirtier than some of the others, but they're out there flying every day. And that's really what these things are about. You know, I mean, some of them are works of art, but give me an airplane that any Saturday morning you can find the owner rolling it out and firing it up and getting up in the air, because that's what flying is all about.
Well, Barnaby, you know, you're talking about, there's a lot of home-built airplanes. One thing that I have noticed is that there are more and more home-builds for sale. Have you seen any trends regarding that lately?
It's not something I pay a lot of attention to, really, because I'm not in that market.
Okay, well,
you're not in the selling or you're not in the buying?
I'm not neither at the moment. I don't have anything worth selling, and if my next airplane is going to either be something certified that I buy so that I have something to fly while I'm tinkering with my latest home built, or my next airplane is going to be whatever I build next, and I have no idea what that's going to be because I have to finish flight testing the one I'm working on now. You know, you always have three projects and hopefully one flying airplane.
Well, you know, that was another thing I was going to ask you. What do you got in the pipeline? But you just answered that.
Well, what I'm working on right now, and I haven't quite ready to go fully public with it, is a Pure 103 ultralight designed for easy manufacture. It was actually inspired by what I did on Junkyard Wars many years ago.
Oh, geez. I love that show.
I've never seen that episode, though.
28 horsepower, single surface, flies at a blazing 30 miles an hour, which I will tell you is fast enough to impale a bee in your forehead if you fly into it, as I discovered to my misfortune a few weeks ago. But, you know, we're a very early flight test stage, so it's at the stage of it flies okay now, and it's going to be a real fun airplane when I get finished dialing it in.
Right.
But, you know,
it's got some work to do.
Well, it's got about seven up and away flights on it, and you know, we did meet the definition of a truly successful first flight. You know, they say that a successful first flight is if you get your airplane back to fix, and a truly successful first flight is if the same pilot is willing to get aboard and make the second flight.
There you go.
And so we achieved that, and we're moving forward with that as time permits. And
all right,
having a lot of fun.
I want to throw you one question. We only got a minute.
Okay.
Electric propulsion. Have you been keeping your
eye
on that?
Electric propulsion. Yeah, I've been keeping my eye on it. I think it's neat. I don't think we're quite there yet. But certainly the idea of a quiet airplane that you can go flying just about anywhere without annoying people, and, you know, no two-stroke oil, no noise. You know, Tom Pagini put forth the idea of an electric ultralight in a hangar with photovoltaics on the roof, so it harvests energy all week, and you use it on Saturday morning to go flying. And I think that's a cool idea, so I'm watching it carefully. I think it's going to be part of the future.
And
well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, Barnaby, for those of you aviation fans out there, what's your website?
www.wainfan.com, WAINFAN.com.
Very good.
Thank you, Barnaby. Great to see you again.
Pleasure to be with you guys again.
Well, we'll have you back. Don't worry.
Definitely.
Looking forward to it.
All right. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.